Hi, I'm Brent Combest, Director of Cloud Sales and Strategy in the Worldwide Small and Mid-Sized Business Group here at Microsoft. One of the favorite parts of my job is having the ability to travel around the world, meeting with partners, hearing their stories about how they've built their business in the cloud. I've heard the good, the bad, the ugly, as well as what they're thinking about in the future. And what I want to do today is share with you some of the best practices, as well as thoughts about how we should be building our strategy for the future, the 2.0 and the 3.0 waves of doing so. And I'm going to focus this around the concept of maximizing profitability, as well as the valuation of your business should you decide to sell it at some point. Now, when I think about working with a partner on building their strategy, there's really three main dimensions that come into play in most cases. The first is, of course, thinking about what the customers are looking for. And you all know this today. You're talking to customers actively. You've read all the great analyst research, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Instead, I'm going to focus on the second two pieces. The first is the channel transformation itself and how we continue to adapt for those partners that are way out ahead of the curve to continue to stay there, while at the same time talking about how you can build your business and your strategy in such a way that'll maximize what it's worth should you decide to either retire or to sell your business at some point down the road. Now, recently, we had the chance to spend some time with a venture capitalist firm out of Vancouver, British Columbia, and they offered us all kinds of great insights into how they go in and review companies in this new cloud world. One of their verticals is software as a service, so they're experts in this space. And when they shared their insight with us, it came down to really two different sides of the coin. The first is what you see here on the left, which is all about what we consider to be increased levers, ways to drive up that valuation multiple. On the right are discount factors, things that bring that multiple back down. So let's walk through these. The first two, revenue growth and gross margin, go together. With revenue growth, what they said they're looking for is very high growth rates. Anything north of 50% is what they would consider ideal. And the number one way to drive this type of growth is through recurring revenue. Think of yourself. If you are a license and time and materials type of a partner today or a business today, if you were to sell $5 million of revenue come January 1st, you'd have to start back at zero. But if you had half of your revenue coming from recurring streams, when January 1st comes around, $2.5 million in effect would be banked, so long as you could manage churn. Now, along with revenue, they really wanted to focus in on which lines were driving the highest levels of gross margin. So if you think about the four major lines of revenue most of our partners drive today, they include, firstly, the license component or the product itself. And if you think about our advisor fees or ability to capture channel incentives on open, you're going to see roughly about 20% on the product itself. As you move into project services, most partners today, they see between 35% and 45% gross services margins. On managed services, it's anywhere to 50 to 55 points of margin there. And those that have packaged IP or finished products that are resold, in most cases, those are north of 65%. So when evaluating a company, they're looking for what proportion of the revenue comes from those high margin streams. So that's something to keep in consideration as well. Next are specialization and packaged IP. These two go together as well. And when I'm talking about specialization, I'm thinking about how do you go after a micro segment of the market? And the most common way that we see this today is through a vertical orientation. How are you selling to attorneys or to real estate agents, as an example? And when you have that domain expertise, are you pairing it with something like packaged IP? Now, packaged IP could be a wide array of things. It could be a simple extension of CRM Online, a SharePoint app, using Azure platform as a service that maybe you're billing out at a couple of dollars per user per month, all the way up to a full vertical ISV solution that really customizes CRM, as an example, for a particular subsegment. The last piece of the increase levers is about the size of the addressable market. How big is the market that you're going after, and how much headroom is left for you to grow? Can you continue on that same trajectory for an extended period of time? Now, as we move over to discount factors, there's a number of things that come into play here. The first is liquidity. And really, this will be a challenge for many of our partners today because they're not publicly traded, and it's difficult to source cash easily. Now, you could have packaged IP, and that could be something that could be sold off if the suitors chose to do that, and that could drive liquidity for you. But for the most part, if you think about the valuation multiple, let's just say for argument, it's 5x EBITDA. This may take that down by a quarter of a point to 4.75 as an example. The next one is where I think the majority of our partners will have most focus as they're thinking about potentially selling or sourcing investable income. And this is this concept of leadership transition. If you're to exit the business as the owner, what will happen to the company? Have you built a line of leadership underneath you that manages the functional areas of the business, such as marketing, sales, and services? And do you have processes in place that enable the company to run and grow at the same rate that it has been historically once you leave the business? This is something that the suitor will want to know and will want to dig into. Now, if you do have these people and these processes in place, they'll come in and they'll start to interview your management to understand, does this set of individuals have the competency to continue to thrive under a new leadership structure or under a new brand, if you will? Can this continue to grow? The fourth piece is about location, and this is more to do with the socioeconomic scenario of where you reside today. Is the cloud favorable? Are the laws favorable for it? Those types of things. And the last piece has to do with the offering maturity. How many customers do you have on your offering today? Does it meet or satisfy the majority of what customers are looking for in the segment that you represent? Those are the big things to think about as you're starting to wrap your mind around how your company will be evaluated in the future. So let's talk about how we construct a strategy that addresses each one of those, both on the increase lever side as well as on the discount factors. And I'm going to walk through each four of these. First is all about creating scale. How do I build an engine that's going to allow me to create a large, substantial revenue stream and achieve those growth rates that we talked about before? The next is about developing focus. How am I going to continue to stay ahead of everybody else and protect my value to my end customers and have the ability to charge a price premium and maximize profitability in that way? Third is about increasing value. It's great that we're attracting and acquiring customers at a rapid pace, but how are we maximizing the growth not only from customer acquisition, but from wallet share as well? And then lastly, we're going to talk about how we create stickiness, or how we make it through our services so that customers never want to leave us. This isn't just about churn. This is about what we do to prevent churn. And I'll take the time to go through these here in just a minute. Now let's start with creating scale. And this is where many of our partners that are out ahead of everybody else are today. And this is what I call the land grab. And we still have, even with the great momentum that we've seen over the last few years, a tremendous amount of market share that's available for capture. And this is a connected supply chain in my mind. It's this well-oiled machine that we're trying to build here. And all these pieces need to be aligned together in order to maximize what we're trying to accomplish. And it all starts with marketing and a proper investment in marketing. Most partners that I meet with today, if I exclude the headcount, they're investing between 1 and 2% of their gross revenue in driving demand generation, while the really strong partners are investing anywhere from 8 to 10%. And what they're doing with that money is changing as well. We've moved away from what was considered interrupt marketing, things like direct mail, teleprospecting, and even largely email, into more digital forums, things like search engine optimization, pay-per-click campaigns, building rich content that's going to elevate your page rank in the algorithms of the search engines. Once we solve the marketing equation, we've got to move over into sales and make sure that we're structured to not only catch the leads, but close them very quickly, and make sure as well that we're driving down our direct sales costs. If you think about this metric in isolation, total quota divided by the loaded cost of my sellers, I'm trying to get my direct sales costs in the range of 7 to 8%. And there's some challenges that are innately incorporated into doing this. The first is, in many cases, one of the learnings we've had from partners today is that they've got to think differently about who they staff to drive sales for them. What was a traditional seller that's been selling on-premise for many years may not work for you in the cloud. This has been a key learning for me as I've invested time with those partners that started in the early days with BPOS. They tried to convince a legacy seller to move over into the cloud, and it was a big struggle. You know, all of us sellers, we want to retire our quota as quickly and as easily as we can. And so what they struggled with was not only teaching them and expecting them to sell in the cloud, but also compensating them in the same way that they had been doing so in the past. So there's a couple things here. The first is we've got to think differently about who we hire. And there's really two pools that we're seeing here. We're seeing a younger audience of sellers come into the businesses that are really successful, anywhere from 22 to 26 years old on average. And they're no longer talking to technical decision makers. They're talking to the CEOs and the CFOs of these small and mid-sized companies. And so they're really educated well on the business side. A lot of them came out with finance and economics degrees, and they're still early in their career. The other pool that we're seeing is for the partners that have a vertical orientation. They're recruiting people out of the verticals that they represent. And maybe someone that was selling cars, if your vertical is auto dealerships, or a real estate agent, somewhat of that nature. They know the business very, very well and can articulate the value to the owner, that business decision maker. So that's changing. And then the process, it's also becoming very tightly managed. And we've got some great resources on the Cloud SureStep page on how to re-architect your sales process and the types of process and types of tools to use. Once you have that in place and you're ready to deploy the customers, it's all about doing so in a hyper-efficient way. There are many automation ISVs that exist today. You've heard us talk about these in the past, Skykick, MigrationWiz, those types of partners. I highly suggest that you investigate using these. We've seen many partners that are doing so improve gross services margins on deployment for Office 365, increase it from the range of anywhere from 30 to 40 points of gross services margin to north of 50 points. The automation is really helping their business. Now, what I like about this is not only the incremental margin or profit that can be driven as a result, but what you can do with that increase in working capital. The partners that are leveraging these tools are, instead of having to hire more services individuals, they're repurposing that incremental working capital back to higher revenue-generating headcount, more sellers. And so it's helping them to grow at a faster rate. Next, let's talk about developing focus. And this is really where I think you as a partner can separate yourself from the herd. In doing so, in picking verticals, which is the most common way, it's not the only way, but in building focus into your practice, it does a number of things for you. The first is, by becoming a domain expert, you can justify charging a higher price point. This is something I've seen consistently, and it's a way for you, if you've been battling competitive price points over the years, for you to see a higher return on that particular piece of your business now. It can also help you in terms of efficiency in many ways in your business, starting with marketing. If you think about how your message will become tighter, how your audience will become more focused, you'll see return on marketing investment or ROMI rates go up as a result of it, higher hit rates. Also, on the sales side, if you think about your sales reps giving the same pitch over and over again, as opposed to having to be superheroes selling to a hospital today, a bank tomorrow, a pro sports franchise the day after that, they're not learning on the fly anymore. They're able to sell much more efficiently, reduce the sales cycle times, and close customers faster. And the same thing can happen on your service delivery practice when you're delivering the same thing in a repetitive fashion. You can also justify broad geographic reach. Now, because you're a true advisor, not just on the technology, but the business component, you're an expert in the space, you can sell in a much more broad geographic perspective than in the past. And as we're starting to move more and more workloads into the centralized data center that Microsoft has, this is another piece to pay close attention to. What was a competitive advantage through geographic proximity is slowly eroding away because no longer do you have to go out and spend time putting your hands on the server or the other infrastructure components. They're now being moved into our data centers. So geographic proximity is not what it once was in terms of a competitive advantage. Lastly, as you think about your relationship with the customer and establishment as the trusted advisor, again, not just for technology, but for the business side as well, it's easier for you to go in and cross-sell and upsell and drive up that average revenue per user that I talked about before. Now, there's three big ways that I see partners begin their journey into verticalization or specializing their business. The first is to simply fall back into one. This could be achieved by selling to one or two customers, maybe three or four, and then they start to refer you to others, and slowly but surely you build up domain expertise, and you start to see repetitiveness in what you're delivering to them, and you can even package that up and sell it over and over again. Think about SharePoint templates that you can build, or CRM online templates that you can build, or products that you build on Azure with the platform as a service approach. It's great ways for you to start to think about packaged IP. The next may be seeing an opportunity. You know, we've got partners that actively today go out and research what companies or what entities in a particular vertical have the right makeup to see benefit from our cloud services. And they're starting to proactively build verticals around this. And this is a bit of a harder journey because you're starting from scratch. Now, lastly, you could go in and look through your install base today, your customer roster, and look for density that you have in that install base and see you may have a large proportion of your customers in one vertical or one segment of the market. At the same time that you do that, I'd spend time interviewing your employees, your staff. Interview your consultants, interview your sellers, see where they've got comfort level and expertise, and marry that against where the density resides in your client roster, and you can seek verticals in that way to go after. Now, in terms of increasing value to your customers, many of you today started your journey with Office 365. And the best analogy that I've still heard to date on this is that Office 365 is the locomotive that all the other payloads connect to. So many of you have been unlocking your customers' journey to the cloud, starting with the email workload and building upon it with other productivity workloads such as collaboration and communication. And now you're ready for the next step. So that could mean things like Azure and taking their infrastructure into the cloud, or using Intune to manage their devices, and really becoming an outsourced IT provider through managed services. That's the next wave. But what's beyond that? Well, CRM Online provides a whole new door of opportunity to walk through, as does ERP for those of you that are interested in it. Not only do you have migration and customization revenue, as well as reporting development and giving them the optics into business intelligence, but there's a tremendous opportunity here to build packaged IP again. But there's also something really interesting that's starting to happen, and it's this concept of moving data into the cloud and what can be done with it. And this is where if I were to go back into the channel, that's where I spent the first third of my career, would really have a keen interest. If I could capture that business data, that customer data, and that financial data, I can start to do some really intriguing things with it. And this is where I think 5 years down the road, some of our most progressive partners are going to start to move, and what things like Azure are going to open the doors to do. So for example, if I were capturing customer and financial data from my customers, and they were all within a vertical to where the solution they were using was consistent, the taxonomy was consistent, I could normalize that data within Azure and then sell it back to them as a benchmarking service. For those of you that work with some of the consulting firms like the Service Leadership Index or one of the many providers like that out there today, you're providing your data to them and they're giving you back benchmarking information to help you with your business. There's many providers out there that are starting to go down this path. There's actually one that is a point of sale provider in terms of software and the hardware units for it for restaurants, and they do this today. They take all the information from the restaurants back and they give them benchmarking data back on what they're buying or what they're paying for alcohol and food and supplies, and it gives them the advantage to the suppliers or to the distributors on what they should be paying for those goods. So there's a great opportunity there. And once you have line of sight into their business performance as well, you can start to identify which one of those customers are struggling and provide high value business process consulting services back. So for example, imagine yourself selling to automotive dealerships, and you could isolate down to a manufacturer like BMW. And you could say, I can recommend to all the BMW dealerships on the West Coast of the United States my benchmarking service, and I have line of sight into their performance, and I can isolate, say, the worst three in terms of service bay utilization. I can proactively reach out to them and then go not only show them where they have challenges, but coach them through business process consulting how to solve those problems. It's that expansion of the business opportunity now that we have that data and it's put into the cloud. But this can't happen unless all the pieces before that I talked about are built upon. You've got to have enough customers amassed to where you can provide benchmarking services back. So that connected high volume engine, that scalable engine, that land grab has to have taken place. You also have to have vertical domain expertise so that you can go in and provide those types of services, knowledge back to the end customer. And you need to have packaged IP so that you can have that common taxonomy or data set that you're pulling in from the customer to be able to provide those benchmarking services and business process consulting back to them. So that's a quick summary of where I see many of our partners starting to think about taking the business over the long term in the future. Doesn't mean they're all going to go there right away, but over time, these are some of the progressionary steps that we're starting to think about. So from here, I'd love to see each one of you think about your 3-year plan and identify ways in which you yourself can create separation and identify a piece of the market that you could build something similar around. Here, shortly, as of January 20th, on Cloud SureStep, which you can see the link on the bottom right here, we're going to provide you with 33 new tools to help you do this, one of which is a business valuation calculator so you can see where you stand today and where as you make these types of changes to your business, what it'll be worth down the road. We're also going to be providing you with a market analysis guide and tool so that you can investigate which verticals are the best fit for your business and which can derive the greatest level of profit. And the last thing that I want to recommend is to continue to be open-minded. All of the very best partners that I have the privilege of engaging with, those that you see winning the Cloud Partner of the Year type entities, they're all disruptive. They're doing something unique, whether it's driving a unique approach to digital marketing or hiring young sellers and driving high volumes of leads or building IP. They're doing something that's disruptive and is transformational. And think about unique ways in which you can do the same thing. So with that, this is my email address and my Twitter handle. Feel free to reach out to me anytime. I'm always happy to engage and support you in your journey towards maximizing profitability in the cloud. Thanks so much for your time.